Today is Tuesday, November 23rd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. A U.S. House panel issues two more subpoenas for people involved in the Stop the Steal rally.
Some of the most high-profile names in this latest round of subpoenas include Alex Jones and Roger Stone.
A Wisconsin police chief says the man arrested for barreling into a Christmas parade, killing five people, was involved in a domestic dispute but was not being pursued by authorities.
There's no pursuit that led up to this incident. This is not a terrorist event.
And a bus carrying Macedonian tourists crashes into Bulgaria, killing at least 45 people. We'll have these stories and more next. Tensions continue to rise along the border between Russia and Ukraine. Ukraine's defense ministry on Tuesday said Russian-controlled forces in eastern Ukraine are increasing combat readiness and have carried out large exercises. Ukraine and NATO countries have expressed concern that Russian troop movements near Ukraine's borders could pave the way for an assault. Russia says it has no such plans and accuses Ukraine and the United States of stoking tensions. Also on Tuesday, Germany's acting foreign minister Heiko Maas called the reports of a Russian troop buildup extremely worrying. The Kremlin said Tuesday any decision by the United States to send military advisors or equipment to Kiev would fuel tensions. The comments come as two refitted former U.S. Coast Guard patrol boats intended to bolster the Ukrainian Navy arrived in Ukraine as part of a $2.5 billion package of assistance to Kiev since 2014. Amid concerns about the unusual buildup of Russian troops near the Russia-Ukraine border, the Ukrainian Minister of Defense has come to Washington to discuss defense and strategy issues. Ostap Yarosh reports.
U.S. officials say they are monitoring a buildup of Russian military forces near the border with Ukraine. The Ukrainian Minister of Defense, who is in Washington, says the constant Russian military presence is nothing new.
Our intelligence and American intelligence or United Kingdom intelligence, they do their job, and we matched or compare the research, and we see the same picture. We live in this hybrid war with Russia 8 years. So for us, it's not surprised.
In response, the U.S. Secretary of Defense confirmed his support for Ukraine.
Second, I want to reassure you, as President Biden has said to President Zelensky, our support for Ukraine's self-defense, sovereignty, and territorial integrity is unwavering.
The Institute for the Study of War is also monitoring the movement of Russian troops near Ukraine. Lead Russia analyst Mason Clark says they are seeing military movements. He also says an invasion of Ukraine could prove counterproductive for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
A major offensive operation would likely impose significant costs, either delaying the certification of Nord Stream, sparking increased deployments by NATO or other European forces into Ukraine, and it likely would be a fairly high-cost operation. The Ukrainian military of 2021 is not the Ukrainian military of 2014.
However, former Deputy Secretary General of NATO Alexander Vezhbo says it may be worth the risk for Putin.
Putin may feel that he has to take greater risks to prevent Ukraine from succeeding in its efforts to join the West. And so, because this is about Mr. Putin's legacy and his self-image as the ingatherer of Russian lands, he may take action that doesn't seem entirely logical from our point of view.
The Ukrainian defense minister says the promise of support of the West is of crucial importance.
We are ready. Military guys are ready, but we need unit help from all civilized world. We have no time to be in fear. We need time to be prepared for resilience.
Ostap Yarosh, Miroslava Gongadze, and Alexey Osyka for VOA News.
A bus that was carrying North Macedonians home from a tourist trip to Istanbul has crashed and caught fire in western Bulgaria, killing 46 people. AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Authorities say the accident happened around 2 a.m. and there were children among the victims. The cause of the crash was not immediately confirmed, but it appears the bus hit a highway guardrail, crashed and caught fire. Photos taken shortly after the crash show the bus engulfed in flames with plumes of thick black smoke rising from the scene. Bulgaria's interior minister at the crash site said he had never in his life seen something more horrifying. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
The U.S. House of Representatives Committee investigating the deadly January 6th riot at the U.S. Capitol said on Monday that it has issued five more subpoenas. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells me one of those called to testify is the founder of the right-wing website InfoWars, and the other is a close ally of former President Donald Trump.
Some of the most high-profile names in this latest round of subpoenas include Alex Jones and Roger Stone, who are, of course, close associates of former President Donald Trump. And they're specifically being looked at as to whether they advance planned any of the elements of the storming of the Capitol in connection with that Stop the Steal rally that former President Trump held on the National Mall that day. Basically, what House investigators are looking at is whether or not they fundraised on the basis of storming the Capitol, if they had advanced planning, how much effort went into this beforehand, because, of course, they're trying to prove that this was a calculated effort to overturn the counting of electoral votes for the eventual election of President Joe Biden.
In the statements I've seen, including those from Benny Thompson, the Mississippi Democrat, who's the committee chairman, said that they are just a person of interest, including Jones's coordination, he claims, was with a couple of other people in organizing the rally. Can that be proven in the evidence that you've seen?
Well, this is at a very early stage in the House investigation. So basically what they're doing now is just laying the groundwork for the way all of these different people within Trump's organization interacted, what they were saying to each other in November when some of those first social media groups first popped up and started saying, we need to go to the Capitol, we need to overturn the results of this fraudulent, what they said was a fraudulent election. They're really just connecting all of the different pieces right now so that they can then take the bigger picture and decide if indeed this was a calculated effort.
Thompson has also cited Stone's appearance at a couple of rallies on January 5th, one day before the insurrection. But Stone has released a statement, I understand, denying that he knew anything about it. Is that to be believed, or is there any evidence to support that statement?
Well, one of the elements that House investigators have pointed to, in addition to that rally that Stone attended the day before the storming of the Capitol, is that he actually was using members of the Oath Keepers as members of his guard at that rally. Oath Keepers, of course, were one of the main elements that ended up storming the Capitol. So they're pointing to that. They're pointing to Stone's appearances on Alex Jones' talk show, where he discussed the issues and the storming of the Capitol that eventually did happen. So there's a certain body of evidence in terms of Roger Stone that can't be discarded. It's there. It's out in the open. It's just a matter of whether this was a calculated storming of the Capitol or whether this was a spontaneous event, as some of President Trump's supporters allege.
Have Stone or Jones responded yet?
They have, and they've actually criticized the timing of these subpoenas. We, of course, are in a holiday week here in the United States, Thanksgiving week, when basically all of the business of the country kind of slows down, if not shuts down. And they've both responded and said, look, the timing of these subpoenas are very calculated because it'll be very difficult to respond to them. They're alleging that Democratic House investigators did this for a very particular reason, to kind of stymie them in their response.
Give us a little background on some of the other subpoenas that have come before this and what has happened in those cases.
Well, we, of course, have Steve Bannon, a former President Trump advisor, campaign manager. He's been involved in all of these allegations against President Donald Trump over these years. He was brought in because he refused the subpoena. We also have Katrina Pearson, who is a major top communications manager, press secretary, national press secretary for President Trump. They're really going through all the elements of President Trump's campaign organization and looking at every one of these top people and saying they may have been involved in this effort to, quote, stop the steal.
That was VOA Capitol Hill correspondent Catherine Gibson speaking to me Tuesday about additional subpoenas issued in connection with the January 6th insurrection. The U.S. panel has now issued a total of 40 subpoenas. You're listening to VOA News.
Join me on the next Straight Talk Africa as we discuss the return of Africa's stolen art. France repatriated 26 looted colonial-era artifacts to Benin. Now museums in Europe and the U.S. are rethinking what to do with their African art collections. We'll discuss art restitution and reparations. Join me, Heidi Adams, on the next Straight Talk Africa, this Wednesday at 18:30 UTC.
Former South Korean President Chun Doo-hwan, whose iron-fisted rule of the country following a 1979 military coup sparked massive democracy protests, died on Tuesday. Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan reports.
Former South Korean President Chun Doo-hwan has died at the age of 90, his former press aide said on Tuesday. A former military commander, Chun seized power in the coup of 1979 and then ruled the country with an iron fist. He presided over the 1980 Gwangju Army massacre of pro-democracy demonstrators. He was later charged with mutiny, treason, and was arrested after refusing to appear at the prosecutor's office and fleeing to his hometown. During his trial in the mid-1990s, he defended the coup as necessary to save the nation from a political crisis and denied sending troops into Gwangju. In what was dubbed the trial of the century by local media, Chun was later found guilty of mutiny, treason and bribery and sentenced to death. In their verdict, judges said Chun's rise to power came through illegal means which inflicted enormous damage on the people. The ruling was, however, commuted by Seoul's High Court in recognition of Chun's role in the fast-paced economic development of the country and the peaceful transfer of the presidency in 1988. But his story didn't end there, and he made several returns to the spotlight. In 2003, he sparked outrage when he claimed he had assets of just around $245 US in cash, two dogs and home appliances, despite owing over $185 million US in fines. Last year, he was also found guilty for defaming a late democracy activist and Catholic priest in his 2017 memoirs.
That was Reuters correspondent Libby Hogan reporting. Economists say China's model of investment in Africa is gaining public support despite the debt burden it imposes on many countries. According to economic experts and the locals, the United States' multi-billion dollar investments in Africa are less visible and make less of an impact on people's daily lives. Victoria Omunga reports from Nairobi.
Catherine Kiura's electronic business is one of thousands in Kenya that distributes products from both China and Western countries. Kiura says her Chinese products are moving the fastest.
There's first quality, second quality to fifth quality. So it depends with what the customer is asking for, because we will sell something that a customer wants. If it's a bulb for 30 shillings, I have. If it's a bulb for 50 shillings, I have.
Electronics is a target area of investment by Chinese companies in Africa. Locals say such investments are impacting their daily lives directly.
A lot of products we see in the shops are from China. Government projects, we hear, are also being run by Chinese. So even though America is investing, we haven't seen them on the ground. We hear that America has done this and that, but we haven't seen them at the grassroots.
Economists say the model of investment by foreign countries is key in the competition for influence across Africa.
China has followed its money in. Whenever it's invested, unlike other lenders, it's actually followed its projects with the engineers, sometimes even to an extreme of having their own workers. But then resulted in is you've had a very visible impact.
During his three-nation tour of Africa last week, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said his country is investing in the continent without imposing unsustainable levels of debt. Wahoro told VOA that distinction is an important one.
If you look in the overall picture of the debt stock, and by this I mean other types of debt beyond commercial, because China has been mainly commercial debt, The West is still ahead in terms of actual dollars on the ground, and also because if you include the Bretton Woods institutions, the World Bank and the IMF, then the totality of that bilateral and multilateral institutions, you could say the West is still, this is still the West's space.
In a bid to strengthen relations with Africa, the White House has announced it will host an African Leaders Summit in 2022. Victoria Amunga for VOA News, Nairobi.
Authorities say the suspect arrested Monday after plowing his SUV into a Christmas parade in the Midwestern city of Waukesha, Wisconsin, had a history of criminal behavior. Police say the 39-year-old man had been involved in a domestic disturbance shortly before the incident occurred. AP correspondent Tim McGuire reports.
Five people are dead, close to 50 others injured, when a man drove his SUV into a parade in a Milwaukee suburb. A 39-year-old man is in jail facing intentional homicide charges after leaving the site of a domestic disturbance before police arrived and barreling into a parade underway Sunday in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And this from ABC 7 Chicago. Police Chief Dan Thompson says officers were not chasing Daryl Brooks Jr. despite his allegedly being involved in the dispute just minutes earlier.
There's no pursuit that led up to this incident. This is not a terrorist event.
Four of the five killed are women, 52 to 78 years old, the other an 81-year-old man. Nearly half of the 48 people injured are children. Dr. Michael Meyer, head of pediatric intensive care at Wisconsin Children's Hospital in Milwaukee, says most of the nine in critical condition are also children.
We have six patients who we list in critical condition.
I'm Tim McGuire.
The German military is preparing to make coronavirus vaccines mandatory for troops as COVID-19 infections rise across the country. The Defense Ministry on Tuesday confirmed a report that officials and soldiers' representatives have agreed to add the coronavirus shot to the list of required vaccines for soldiers. The German military recorded 1,215 COVID cases within the military as of Monday. The nationwide total of confirmed cases rose to 43,326 in the past 24 hours, according to the country's disease control agency. The head of the United Nations nuclear watchdog is meeting with Iranian officials in Tehran to push for greater access in Iranian nuclear sites. Tuesday's visit comes ahead of diplomatic talks that are set to get underway over Iran's nuclear agreement with world powers. An International Atomic Energy Agency official says his inspectors remain unable to access surveillance footage in the Islamic Republic and face more difficulty trying to monitor Tehran's growing uranium stockpile. Former U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally withdrew from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. Iran now enriches small amounts of uranium up to 60% purity, which is close to weapons-grade levels of 90%. In a security crackdown following deadly suicide bombings, Ugandan police say they have arrested four Somalis for bringing a suspected explosive device into a resort due to host President Yoweri Museveni this week. This comes a week after a pair of bombings killed four in the capital, Kampala. A police spokesman said a detonator was discovered during a routine vehicle search at a nearby popular hotel, which is the site of a ministerial meeting on Thursday. Police have tightened security in recent weeks after Uganda suffered a series of deadly attacks, including last week's suicide bombings in Kampala. The Islamic State group claimed responsibility for those attacks, which occurred within minutes of each other. This holiday season promises to be an unusual one in the United States. Experts say supply chain issues, the pandemic, inflation, and online sales will affect holiday shopping. Maxim Moskalov has the story.
In 2021, just like the previous year, the majority of holiday season shopping will likely be done online, say experts. The ease of online shopping is one pandemic lesson. According to research by Adobe Digital Insights, sales during the 2021 holiday season could top $207 billion in the U.S. alone. But that doesn't mean things are back to normal, according to Vivek Pandya from Adobe Digital Insights.
But because of the pandemic and because of these global supply chain issues, we're seeing prices kind of come into the season about 3% higher than what we've seen in the past. And then those actual discounts are becoming weaker. So as a result of the the demand surges and more limited availability, the prices start to move up across these goods online.
And supply chain issues are prompting businesses to start cutting prices early and not waiting to start the Christmas in a mad rush on the day after Thanksgiving called Black Friday.
Retailers don't necessarily want there to be a mad rush of orders placed right before the Christmas holiday, for example, because they might not be able to fulfill those kinds of orders. So it's in their best interest to kind of shift demand earlier.
Isaac says due to supply chain problems, stores are more focused on having the most popular items in stock rather than a variety of options for consumers. Consumer psychologist Dana Hoffman says holiday shoppers may be disappointed.
I think many people in the United States anyway have this attitude that, it's kind of normal. We're back to normal. And they're going to expect that kind of normalcy maybe when they go online. I think retailers need to get ready for the onslaught of returns. So maybe more than any other time, I think there's that frustration is going to turn into a lot of disappointment.
Online shopping has also changed the concept of holiday shopping on Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving.
In the past, it was Cyber Monday, right? Black Friday, Cyber Monday. Now it's this holiday shopping. It's like Cyber November. It's Black November. There's a lack of CDL, commercial driving licensed individuals. So there's a definite labor shortage of those individuals. There's a massive labor shortage of retailers.
Experts advise consumers to be less picky choosing gifts this year and always have a plan B if something doesn't quite go according to plan. Maxim Moskalko for VOA News, Washington.
A mission is underway to retrieve scientific data from the rugged ocean floor in the Southern Ocean, formerly known as the Antarctic Ocean, that could explain what triggers underwater earthquakes and tsunamis. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Some of the world's most violent underwater earthquakes are unleashed beneath the hostile waters of the Southern Ocean, but researchers don't know why. Sophisticated noise and motion sensors could help unlock the secrets of how tectonic plates or pieces of the Earth's crust start to collide, a process known as subduction. For the past year, an array of 27 seismometers positioned on the ocean floor has formed a giant telescope pointing to the planet's core. The instruments are now being retrieved. Professor Hrvoje Kalčić, a chief scientist from the Australian National University's Research School of Earth Sciences, hopes the study will help to explain how and why earthquakes occur.
We cannot predict when exactly they will happen, how large they will be, but we can understand better their physical mechanism, and we can also understand better the Earth's structure in that area, and this is critical to predict the propagation of the seismic waves from the hypocenter of these earthquakes to any other point on the Earth's surface, including a possible generation of tsunami.
Scientists hope the study will give them a better understanding of how earthquakes and tsunamis might affect Australia and New Zealand, which lies within the seismically active region known as the Pacific Ring of Fire. The expedition is scouring some of the world's steepest underwater mountain ranges to depths of more than 3.5 miles in a remote area known as Macquarie Ridge, halfway between New Zealand and Antarctica. Researchers say the techniques could also be applied to other oceans. The international study is a collaboration with various Australian institutions, the University of Cambridge and the California Institute of Technology. The 3-week voyage began in Wellington, New Zealand on November 10. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of Nadia Taha and the entire production team, thanks so much for listening. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington.